Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. We're located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94 between 164 and Highway F. We're in that beautiful Ridgeview Corporate Park. We're also in the Village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank building across from Winkies. And summer's now right around the corner, but we've been very blessed to be able to service our clients in Bonita Springs, Florida during this winter. If you would like to put a face with a voice, if you'd like to know more about us, go to ellenbecker.com for more details. I've been looking so forward to doing this radio interview. I received a book not too long ago. The author is Dr. Ski Chilton, and it's the 4 Steps CAS process that will transform your life. The name of the book being There is Another Way to Happiness. Well, you guys have been listening to me for a really long time, but you know I'm all about happiness. And I was curious because happiness is such a elusive word in many cases. And I think about all the times in my life, the struggles, the ups, the downs, the roller coasters. And I just really started to think about, you know, what's made me happy in my life? Why do I feel so happy and so blessed? And I think that one of the reasons is that even with all of those ups and downs and all of the things that happened, that I always really felt that there was a reason and I was growing and learning. And so I was really curious as to what Dr. Ski had to say about there's another way to happiness. So Dr. Ski, thank you for joining me today.
Oh, it's such an honor to be with you, Karen. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'm curious as to, I read your story and the whys, but I think my listeners would be really curious to hear your story. And of course, as the name of the show is Money Sense, and people are probably thinking, where's she going with this Money Sense? And what has that got to do with happiness? But it really does. It, because money doesn't make you happy. And I certainly can tell you stories after stories after stories. So I always think that time is money, happiness is money, financial security is money, but they all have to work together.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's a major misconception that happiness is natural. And from a brain wiring perspective and a genetic perspective, epigenetic perspective, nothing could be further from the truth. And so a little bit about my story. I grew up in a house without a bathroom in the Appalachian Mountains. So I grew up on a small 8-acre tobacco farm, and I was severely dyslexic. Being dyslexic in Appalachia was not a good thing because they put me in a special trailer, and the trailer had a nasty word that kind of was the retarded trailer. And I don't mean to use that word, but it was a word that clearly for my entire life has driven everything. It basically, what 3 years in that trailer did, not being able to read coming out of high school, the only way of getting into college was being a good athlete. What that said is, you're not enough. You're not enough, and you'll never be enough. And, you know, what My response to that was, I'll show you I am enough. And, you know, to make a long story short, it turned around that dyslexia was great creativity. You know, I went on to get a 6-year PhD at Wake Forest in 3 years, trained with a Nobel Prize winner, a professor at Johns Hopkins, professor at Wake Forest, professor at the University of Arizona, a 55-page curriculum vitae. I may be in many ways the most successful person I know, and yet that I'm not enough would never go away. There was, with each accomplishment, there was a bigger mountain out there. And no matter what I accomplished, no matter what awards I won, that I'm not enough echoed in the back of my mind. So this childhood trauma, and I hate to get back to that because we talk about it all the time, but we are born with the genetics. And then on top of that genetics, I remember when the human genome, and I'm digressing, and Bill Clinton said, we've solved everything. 99% of diseases will be solved by understanding the base pairs in the human genome, or the 23,000 genes. And we've almost nothing has been predicted by that, because there was this little thing that laid on top of genetics called epigenetics. And it was, the genetics was like the piano keys, and the epigenetics of which of those keys got played. And which of those keys got played, especially in early childhood, dictates so much. And for my life, it dictated a journey that had to be proven that no matter how much I accomplished, that wasn't going to be enough for me to find happiness.
You didn't feel worthy.
I didn't feel worthy. I'm not enough. I wasn't enough. It was wired in early, and from an evolutionary unconscious perspective, our 95% of our thoughts come from our unconscious mind. Pre-verbally, everything comes from our unconscious mind. It's built for survival, protection. It's built not to get kicked out of the tribe. It's built to remember the past, remember the threats, remember the childhood trauma, control the future, and don't get kicked out of the tribe. I mean, you get kicked out of the tribe and you're dead. So loneliness was not. So coming out of this unconscious mind is basically every sad and difficult emotion can be transferred back or traced back to this evolutionarily primitive brain.
You talk in your book about rewiring your brain. How did you get, what got you to that point that you discovered? And I think you talked a lot about I and me and being stuck in that place of the only survival you knew was to keep accomplishing, and I was better, I was bigger, I had more education. How did you make that transition into literally what you talk about rewiring your brain to, instead of striving for everything and never being happy, to finding a way, an inroad to happiness?
Yeah, I describe the I and the me, and the me is the unconscious mind. And the me, again, is the thing that we feel. It's our anxiety. It's where it's all coming from. And I did. So how did I do it? Well, after being in my mid-40s and coming out of, I seemed to be able to save the world. I was in Africa for 15 years. I seemed to be able to do everything. But I was hurting the people I loved the most, or they were hurting me. So there was this immense pain, taking hands full of anti-anxieties, antidepressants, drinking too much, lots of things, trying to deal with the pain underneath of I'm not enough, I'm not worthy, and I can't do enough to become worthy. My me, my egoic self, it can't do enough. And I'm not using ego in a bad way here, but it can't be enough. So there had to be a shift. There had to be a shift from that way, that me way, in which I could find, and again, I'm going to now use a brain, I could move to my prefrontal cortex, my orbital cortex, the front of my brain, the conscious part of my brain, and I could actually use the conscious part of my brain to surveillance the unconscious and to ultimately be able to meditate and pay enough attention for long enough, enough times a day in which that surveillance, what is that saying? What is that unconscious mind saying? What am I feeling? What is the anxiety? And where does that come from? Where's it coming from? And is it making me happy? Because I have the option to get on that train with that unconscious mind and ride it for days, weeks, years. Or I have the option, my mindfulness, my eye has the option of saying no. So it really becomes we all live in this hurricane of me, but how does our eye, and I'm going to use a metaphor here, EYE and I sit in the middle, in the calm, in the eye of that hurricane, and remain calm and happy.
How do we make the choice to pause?
Exactly. And we have to make the choice to pause. I mean, I meditate 3 times a day. Now it's not, I'm not sitting in some sweat hut 3 times a day, but in the morning I have a 15-minute meditation. It's either a guided or a non-guided. I'm on the roof of my apartment building and I'm meditating. In the middle of the day, I walk across this 2-mile University of Arizona campus and I'm looking at the trees and looking at the plants and looking at these beautiful saguaro cactuses and looking at the students and I'm connecting with everyone. So people all the time ask me, what does mindfulness mean? Mindfulness means you can live in the moment. The past is the past. The future is the future. The now is the only place that we live, we can live, that happiness happens. So, and then at night, I usually another 5 to 10 minutes kind of recouping the day. Wow, what, what put it, was I in the moment most of the day? And if I wasn't, then where was I? What was the problem? And it's so funny because people, and especially your audience, might think, you can't be, if you're meditating 3 times a day and you're not successful. I've never had a more successful year than this past year or this past 5 or 6 years. Because once you begin to live in the present moment, you deeply connect with people much better. You deeply connect, you're highly, much more creative. You can
You're
count.
available. You're
You're available.
available.
Absolutely. People love you. I mean, it's even when you're as old as me, people love you.
My guest today is Dr. Ski Chilton, and he is the author of There Is Another Way to Happiness. We're going to take a break. And Dr. Ski, what I'd like to do is do our next section and talk about how do people see themselves in you. What, how can they see the signs that, because people are moving so fast, they don't even know that they're not happy, or they don't know what happiness is, and it's a word. And certainly we all would say, boy, I want to be one of those happy people. And yet we get so caught up, like you said, in life. How does someone identify who they are? And with that, we will be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. My guest today is Dr. Ski Chilton. He is the author of There Is Another Way to Happiness. And I want to say a little piece in here. He has said, this book is about a quest for happiness, a journey through life's brutal truths and the transformational power of our struggles. It's about awakening to the fact that a more beautiful path to happiness exists, often only discovered when we've been pummeled enough by emotional and relational challenges. The wisdom offered here isn't from a psychologist, a psychiatrist, or spiritual guru, but from someone whose insights are rooted in evolutionary biology and inspired by painful personal experiences and mindful teachings from history's greatest minds. How does someone see themselves in you and want to push that button that says, I want to know more?
Yeah. Well, I think your audience may have a lot in common with me. I mean, I think your audience has strived for success, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And your audience has done many, many things and many wonderful things. But if they're like the normal population, two-thirds, according to a recent Harris poll, two-thirds of people are under stress and they're not happy. So people are simply not happy. And I think the key here is pain. I hate to say this, and people hate it when I say it, but if you're in pain, it's almost like being dyslexic. When I hear a child is dyslexic and their parents are coming and crying, and I'm going, no, 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 no. That child's got a gift. You don't know what that child's got. Well, if you're in pain right now, there are kind of three responses to pain. One is to give in and succumb to it. Now, that ain't my way, and it's never been my way. The other is to become a victim, which is so dangerous because victimhood gives back. Oh, poor so-and-so, poor ski, man. What a poor guy. Man, look at that health. Two cancers. He broke his pelvis in half with that horse. Oh, my gosh. Take one step too far down victimhood and you're gone. The other is the search for another way. And I don't mean to give the title of my book, but the search for another way. I don't think, as an evolutionary biochemist and geneticist, that 8 years ago there could not have been a person who poo-pooed mindfulness more than me. So this is not, this mindfulness thing is not natural for me. This is, but 8 years ago, there were 30 scientific papers on it. Now there's over 9,600 scientific papers. There's over 250 clinical trials, from PTSD to pain to depression to a whole variety of human maladies. This works. This mindfulness works. It's not easy. I mean, the first 3 months, you're going to sit out there, and I've got 13 weeks in my book of meditation. First 3 months, you're going to sit out there and you're going to feel like an absolute failure because you can't control that monkey mind. That unconscious mind will be driving you crazy, but you do get better at it and you will get better at it. And all of a sudden, as I say, my mind went from the Buddhist observer, and I love Buddhist teaching and the Buddha, it went from Buddhist observer to counselor, to teacher, to forgiver. And it ultimately changed me being in meditation. It let me know that I'm more than enough. And all my ability right now is, and it's my superpower, is I get to co-create. I don't know if people believe in a God or divinity. And probably one of the few scientists who might. And I have a chapter, When Science Moves to the Sacred, in my book. But I believe when we get in this place, we get a superpower, and we're co-creating with the universe, if we want to call it that. The creative power of the universe, if we want to call it that. God, if we want to call it that, but we are then co-creators to love the world. And that's our job. And as long as we're doing that, my goodness, it's powerful.
One of the things that you write in the book is, I discovered that the more I allowed my thoughts to come and go without attachment or judgment, the calmer my mind became. I was training my brain to witness the thoughts and emotions rather than becoming entangled in them.
I do it every day. In fact, I had a difficult conversation this morning. I'm just going to share that. I won't share what the conversation was, but I have a difficult conversation this morning. And before this show, I went outside and sit under a tree for 15 minutes. And that conversation just kept coming. And I kept going, nope, not today. Not today. Not getting on the train today. I got an interview I had to do. I got to help people. Not today. You don't get access to my mindfulness, conscious mind today. And we have that power. We have
So
that.
when we're talking about the people in my audience to recognize themselves, how do they, I mean, what is the cost to not being happy?
I mean, what is this all about? I mean, what is this? I know that, and I've done okay financially too, but it all goes back in the box. What's this all about? I mean, it's short. It happens quickly. Our lives are over. You and I are probably about the same age. It's over quickly. What is it all about? And how do we get to the next side? How do we go around? How do we get in the river, not put our feet down, not put rocks in our pockets, not get out of the river and face? I've had two cancers. How do we face the class five rapids? And how do we look around at the end of our life, the curve in the river, not knowing what's on the other side of the curve and having confidence that the other side of the curve is beautiful? The around the curve is beautiful. So, it doesn't matter how much money you have. That's it, and again, it's not, but that money can love the world in extraordinary ways. You want to blow your life up, blow your life up and love the world in extraordinary ways. As I said, I've spent over 18 years in Africa. Right now I'm working on how to feed 10 billion people by the year 2050 when 3 billion are going to starve. Things that we get to work on are just almost unthinkable when we get in this river.
It's really very exciting. Again, I'm going to say my guest is Dr. Ski Chilton. He's an author. There is his book is There's Another Way to Happiness. It's on all the natural sites to be able to order it. It's a really easy read. And do you know what? It's a great book. If you've got kids that are in college, you got Easter coming, you got Father's Day coming, all kinds of different things. It's a great gift to give someone because what it does is it opens up your eyes, and it's that, who is he talking to? Is he talking to me? What is happiness? And of course, there's a lot of times that we have happiness, but do you have overall happiness? Do you have you found that purpose in your life to say, I'm happy? Because when you're happy, you spread happiness. It's contagious. It's absolutely amazing. With that, we're going to take a break and we will be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. I am the founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. And you might be asking yourself, I tuned into Money Sense, and here we're talking about mindfulness and happiness. And what's that got to do with money? It really has a lot to do with money. It really has a lot to do with your own self-worth. And what I have figured out is money doesn't make you happy. And if you haven't figured out how to be happy before you retire or before you dip into that retirement pot that you have, it's not going to make you happy. You have to go to happiness. You have to choose happiness. You have to be happy. And then you get to enjoy all those wonderful things that you've envisioned for your future. My guest today is Dr. Ski Chilton. The book is There Is Another Way to Happiness, a great gift. It's wonderful. And as we were talking during the break, I had asked you, how do people again identify with it? Is it that person that gets up every day and everything is a routine and you just do the same thing? I have people say all the time, I get up, I go get dressed, I go to work, I come home, I eat, I watch TV, I go to bed, and I do the same thing the next day. Is it the person who's can't smile at other people or is grumpy? Is it the person who always looks for what's wrong and not what's right? I think sometimes we don't even realize that we aren't in that place of genuine overall happiness.
Karen, you're making such a good point. I mean, you're making such a good point. And I think for 45 years, I ran away from happiness with my 80-hour work week. I ran away from happiness with all that I was going to achieve. I ran away from happiness, even when I was doing good things, by the number of people I could save in countries like Sudan and South Africa. I think that I was running away from happiness, had no idea that happiness, I was convinced that everything I was doing was going to bring happiness. And until it didn't in a very, very profound way, quite honestly, until I faced death with a cancer scare, it wasn't until then I was able to slow things down. And I think a key is to slow things down. That's hard for me. It's still hard for me. It's still hard for me not to be in here at least 60 hours a week. It's still hard, but slow things down. Are you okay with things? Ask yourself that. Are you okay with things? Can you be okay with things? Because if you can't, then either you're happy or you're in control. But you don't get to be both. You don't get to be a control freak and be happy, because happy will not come to people who control. Do you try to fix everything, especially everybody? I'm the worst. I mean, I am the poster child for codependency, because that part of me that said I'm not enough went and looked for people to fix, hoping that if I fix those people, they would love me and then I would be enough. So there's so much to what you're saying, to slowing down. Are we truly able to slow down? Are we able to let go of things? Are we able to let go of trying to fix everything? Are we able to let go of control? Because the opposite control is the unconscious mind. It is the unconscious mind that is remembering the past, knows the threats, focused on the future, and it is inconsistent. We can either be happy and in the present moment, because in the present moment, there is no future. And there is no past. People ask me again all the time, what is mindfulness? Mindfulness is getting into and living in the present moment. Because if you're living there, you can't control the future, because the future doesn't exist. If you're there, you can't focus, oh, I messed up, oh, I'm wet. You can't focus on all your failures of the past. They're gone. Wake up, they're gone. You can only slow down and be in the present moment. And that feels so good.
I had someone listen to someone talking just recently, and they said, do you realize that every time you say yes, You're saying no to something else. And every one of the statistics was that most people say yes to things, and the no on the other end is something they say no that's good for themselves.
Exactly.
Mindfulness, or it's the no of taking care of your health, or exercising, or eating properly, spending time with your family, spending time with your children. So it's almost like that person you're talking about is the yes person. And when you say no to something, you're saying yes to something else. So it's almost pausing, taking that time every time you want to say yes to something, whatever it is, to ask yourself, well, what is on the other side of it? What am I saying no to? And is it worth it?
I'm a mentor to several junior faculty here. And that's the big mistake. The big, because I know one or two of them that are superstars. And there's a great book by Tom Hollis called The Middle Passage. And in the middle passage, we say yes to everything. And we completely lose ourselves, we lose our families, we lose our children, we lose everything. So, Karen, just to echo exactly what you're saying, if I say yes to everything, I don't get to spend my Saturdays and Sundays hiking the Sonoran Desert. I don't get to do all the things that I love. I don't get to spend time with people I love and be present with people I love. So you're so, and it's so easy when you're younger to be ambitious and think, yes. And then all of a sudden, if you're really gifted, you're going, holy crap, I don't even know which way to turn. I don't know what to do first. I don't know how. There is no way that I can get out. It's going to take 80 hours every week. And guess what? I will never spend a moment in the present moment with myself.
Wow, that is pretty profound, because I think that that is one of the things that I've had to really work on. Is I want to say yes to everything, because I too want to fix things, I want to make things right. And typically when I was saying yes to something, I was saying no to things for myself, things that I really needed in order to be healthy and to be happy and to be alert and bright. And it just becomes almost a habit of saying yes.
And the irony is, and this is the real irony, is you're saying no to being more successful, because when you're crowded, when all of that stuff is going on, it's impossible to be creative. It's impossible to work on the most important things. I know you must have a lot of people who are retiring and things like that, and what a transition that turns out to be. But without purpose, and dare I say, a divine purpose, as we head toward the end of our lives, we are lost. We're absolutely lost. So all of a sudden, we no longer have these 80-hour work weeks, but we're okay. Well, that's about enough golf. That's about enough. What do we do now? And I happen to be 66, and I just think I'm just starting. I'm just now wise enough to really make a difference.
I was talking to you earlier, Ski, and one of the things that I have noticed as I'm just framing my clients in retirement and what that looks like, it doesn't almost matter what age somebody is, but you can look at somebody and know if they're happy just by watching them walk. If they're walking slow, shuffling, if they're walking like they have a place to go, it's so exciting. And granted, we all go through those ups and down times where we are sad and where we aren't particularly happy. But we, by being happy and having that on your plate as something that you stand for, as part of your purpose, your own private purpose statement, it helps pull you out of those moments. We're not talking about 24/7 being happy because emotions are important. Those ups and downs and happy, glad, and sad and all that is very important in our lives. But also by having that idea of happy and being happy for me is always comes out in ways that I can make other people happy and give back to the world. And I think that people can see themselves in what you're saying, if not certainly all the time, some of the times. And how do we get out of that rut? And so we're going to take our last break, unfortunately, here, and we're going to talk about a process that you can use, a way, a solution. So Dr. Ski hasn't just written a book telling you what might be missing. He's also got a list of ways that you can actually create a new way of being. And with that, we will be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. My guest today is Dr. Ski Chilton. He is the author of There Is Another Way to Happiness. We've spent most of our time today sort of identifying and outlining some of the things that people get caught up in and lose sight of what happiness is. And I'd like to spend, though, the remainder of our time looking at solutions and looking at ways that you can change the path that you're on, ways that you can redefine. And what did you call it? Rewire? Rewire your brain to find happiness and to spend more time in happiness than in being unhappy.
Well, you know, it's so funny you should mention the word rewire. My previous book was called The Rewired Brain, but I had a really interesting encounter with a woman at a Barnes and Noble book signing. And she came up to me and she almost grabbed me by the lapel. She said, "I hate you." And I went, "Wow, that was strong." And she said, "You told me in no uncertain way why I was so messed up, but you did not provide me a solution." She said it was like identifying a tumor, but not having a cure for it. And she was spot on. She was exactly right. Yes, I had a few mindfulness where, but that set me on a journey. I'm a scientist. What is the framework? How do we solve this? And so I developed a process called the CAST process, CAST. And the first step into the CAST process is C, awakening to consciousness. Now, what that means is it's the realization that you're not abnormal if you're having these problems. The second step is deepening awareness. There are things that are driving this. And simply for me to be aware that my biggest driver is I'm not enough. And what are the ramifications of I am not enough? It means that I'll do almost anything to be enough. So it is the awareness of our shadow selves. It's the awareness of things that have happened to us in our early past that have created who we are. And they may have created us very successful, as in my case, but they didn't make us happy. In fact, they made us really unhappy. The S in CAST is the art of surrender or the art of letting go. Now, I don't like to spend a whole lot of time on my past, and I don't like parent bashing, and I don't like any of those things because we've raised kids the way that we were taught to raise kids. And we need to stop, this generational problems. But our mothers raised us the way they were raised, and their mothers the way they were raised, or fathers. And so we're not bashing parents when we're looking back. In fact, we're not even staying there very long. We're not staying in this awareness. We make ourselves aware of it and our propensity towards it. And then we move on to the art of surrender. And we do that in meditation. We're sitting there going, here comes the train. It's a big freight train. I'm on the platform. Door just opened. Do I get on? No, I'm going to let go. I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let it go because if I stay here and slow down, it'll go like a leaf in the water. I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let it all go. I'm going to surrender it at all in 12-step programs. That is a critical. The third step is surrender. Surrender is vital. What we're talking about with our unconscious minds are mental addictions, no different. They utilize the same parts of our brain as opiates or alcohol or any. So there, I often say that the addicted, the chemical drugs don't have a special seat at the table. We're all addicted, emotionally addicted. And that art of surrender is critical. The final step is trust. Trust the journey. And that is the deep belief that you are where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. You're in that river. Now, I have a really important meeting next week with in Mexico with the heads of one of the largest universities in the world, 25 campuses. Now, the things, I don't know what's going to happen at that meeting, but the resources they have are enormous. This could be my last stage of life to change the world, to feed the world. A lot of things could happen. That just came up. I mean, that just happened to me. A headhunter out of London found me. That just came up. Now, whether I get it or not, really, or whether I participate, I don't know, nor do I care. I do care, but for me, this is the next step in the journey. The next step is not that I get something there. The next step is the journey is on Tuesday, I'm going to Monterey, and then on Thursday, I'm going to Mexico City, and I'm meeting with the leadership of this massive university system throughout Latin America. And I trust that that is where I'm supposed to be when I'm supposed to be there. I've gained enough wisdom. I know enough about how to feed the planet. I know enough about precision nutrition. I know enough about all the disciplines that are necessary. I trust this is the next right move.
I'm going to ask you one final question. What do you hope that people, that this book does for people?
It's easy and it sounds harsh, but I'm going to say it anyway. Wake up. Wake up. Wake up to this conscious mind within you. Wake up to your ability to co-create, to your ability to love the world. Wake up. Happiness is inside of you, wanting to come out. Just wake up. Wake up. You can have the most beautiful life, no matter what age you are, even if you've screwed up a big portion of it, as I did. It wake up. It's there.
My thank you. My guest today is Dr. Skeet Chilton. He is the author of There Is Another Way to Happiness. You could also go to, how
Well,
can they get in touch with
probably the
you?
best is Dr. Ski Chilton, or at Dr. Ski Chilton on Instagram. Another way to happiness is just a small site that I built, but you can get it on Amazon. We just did the Audible, and it is so good. It's a good friend of mine, baritone voice. I'm listening to it. I'm teaching myself because I wrote this in 5 weeks. I don't know how it happened, but it's so beautiful to listen to.
Oh, I love Audible. I will definitely do that, even though I've read the book, because it's the kind of book you can go back to and refer. My guest today, again, Dr. Ski Chilton, he has been wonderful and he has so much to share. And as always, I hope I've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen. Have a great weekend. Bye.